Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Crack. This is Pete C. Carroll, and yes, you have missed me a lot over the last 2 weeks, I can only imagine. But we're back today, full strength squad, and ready to deliver the news of combat sports to all you beautiful people. And what might that be, you might ask? Well, I had the list together. You know, the list was made. And then Tyson Fury had to jump on Instagram, on the treadmill, and start yapping about Hearn, about this alleged list of demands that a lot of media members seemed to be garnished with yesterday. All of it results in, once again, well, not really once again, we've always been here. We don't know if Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury is going to happen. It's been a decade of exactly this, but there are some fun videos, so we will want to get into that. We'll also be talking about Usman Nurmagomedov, the sensational, undefeated lightweight champion of PFL. John Martin says he thinks he's going to be able to compete with the UFC. He thinks he's going to be putting a nice old offer in front of Usman. Usman cannot yet negotiate with the UFC because he's in that exclusive matching period, I believe. But we are going to look to the idea of him entering the UFC. We're going to look at Paul Hughes' comments about him, how good this guy is, and can he be a successor once again to the lightweight throne, another Dagestani champion after Habib, then Islam, then him. A lot to talk about there, a lot of meat on the bone. Chuck Mendenhall has wrote a spectacular article about Din Thomas. Yeah, you know Din. You know what Din did. Everybody's talking about Din. And it's not so good talk about Din because kind of threw Jillian on the bus there in the post-fight of UFC 330 after her unsuccessful bid at Mackenzie Dern's title. Yeah, a lot of people coming out of the woodwork coming at Din. It almost felt like this was like a massive red flag to a bull and everybody was waiting to go in with 2 feet on poor old Din. We're going to be talking about that later. Edson Barboza. Yeah, he retired. We talked about it briefly on the post-fight show in the aftermath of UFC 330. But the great Ben Folks, he's been doing a lot of writing. And not just on combat sports, but he did write about this situation. We will be talking about it later. The retirement of Edson Barboza, one of the most violent kickers in the history of mixed martial arts. And of course, we'll be looking ahead to the weekend's action. You've got UFC Sacramento. You've got Cyborg's retirement fight on PFL. You've got Rolly v. Teofimo, and you've got the big RAF event. A lot to be talked about. But before we introduce those beautiful, beautiful, fantastic journalists, let's have a quick word from our friends over at Kalshi. This episode is sponsored by Kalshi, the largest prediction market in the United States. Here's what makes Kalshi different. You are not playing against the house. Kalshi is peer-to-peer trading. You buy yes or no contracts on whether something will happen, and you're trading directly against other users. Think of it like buying or selling a stock. The line isn't set by some algorithm working against you. No. Public opinion sets the price. Kalshi is CFTC approved, federally regulated, which is why it's available all across the country. And that's including California and Texas. That's right. Download the Kalshi app and use code CRACK, that's C-R-A-I-C, to get up to $25 when you trade $25. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade what's next. Thank you very much. I mean, as far as seamless introductions to the show go, I'm on fucking fire today, boys. Yeah. Ben, show me your excitement. You know, this is a huge moment for me. I barely made a single mistake all the way through that.
I was enjoying the funky beats that we were playing during that segment right there. I was
that's
I
nice.
Feel it, you know? And nice. I also appreciate you showing up in whatever this shirt is. You look like a member of the chorus in like a naval musical or something. Like you're back there swabbing the deck and singing along. I love it. It's got kind of an optical illusion vibe. It's a lot of fun.
I remember I wore this shirt in for my first in-studio appearance on the Ariel Wani show, a couple of years ago, and you immediately noticed that I wore the only shirt that can become an optical illusion on my very first day. So I'm very happy with this. I think we have a frozen face situation for you and Chuck at the moment in the three box, so we're going to work on that. We're going to work for the Kings here.
I was wondering what was going on there. All right.
You'd be happy to know, Chuck, that Tom Aspinall has also commented on this t-shirt before. He said, I looked like a fat Where's Waldo? That was his comment on the situation.
Okay, his is much better than mine. He's meaner, but also...
He said he texted to Ariel while I was sitting beside him, and then Ariel just took out his phone and said, hey, guess what Tom said? He said you're a fat Where's Waldo? And I was like, well, See, what a great first day in the office.
When you're a giant man who can like knock people out with the touch of a hand, I guess you can go around saying shit like that. You know, you probably get real used to it. The same way I remember Chad Dundas used to talk about interviewing Frank Mir, who was like, you know, I find that when you have a disagreement with someone, if you just go and talk to them in person, everybody is usually very kind and considerate. Like, yeah, they are. When the heavyweight champion shows up, people get real kind and considerate real fast.
By the way, Pete C, I believe it's pronounced, I don't know, I mean, this might be an Irish thing.
Here we go.
I believe it's pronounced Dean.
Dean.
I think.
Dean
I believe it is. I like the Dean of Mean, Jardine,
boy,
that
don't
type
they,
of thing.
Why do they spell it that way then? It's ridiculous.
I don't know if you know this about people's names. They do all kinds of stuff.
It's not on. It clearly says Din. And until he changes his name to D-E-A-N.
Listen, we're not going to listen to somebody from Ireland tell us that the way names are spelled must be in line with the way those names are pronounced. I've seen what you guys do with a name over there. You will have a name that where it's just like S-A-O-O-A-I-E-R. And then like the sound that comes out of your mouth has nothing to do with any of those letters. We've all observed that.
That is true.
No,
that is true.
We will not hear that from you people specifically, Pete.
Listen. Din, he's gonna do it. Why am I frozen now? What is happening to our screen? Am I frozen for all of you? What is happening? We did not lower the budget on the crack production, I assure you. I'm still moving down here. Okay. It's an audio video show. That's interesting. I like that. I like the frozen image of me there. Do we just launch into the Tyson Fury stuff here, Chuck? What do I do in this situation? You're a professional.
I don't know, man. See, this is a crisis, what I'd call a crisis, and I'm very bad in those, so you don't want to come to me.
Jordan, you tell us what to do. Should we launch into the Tyson Fury?
All right. Yeah, maybe start playing some sound bites or something, and we'll fix this up.
We'll just turn it into a radio play, essentially. It'll be great.
I like it. Well, guess what happened, guys? Yesterday, a lot of people suddenly started talking about an alleged list, I should say. I don't want to get any lawsuits up in the crack HQ. That Eddie Hearn has garnished the promoters, or whoever they are. That's confusing in itself. Anthony Joshua, like ahead of the Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury fight. And they're all kind of saying, like, he wants all this stuff. He wants the all money's payable. I'm quoting from Boxing Scene's article here by Lance Pugmore. All money's payable to Matchroom across all future darts and snooker events to be paid immediately. Yes, I did say snooker. I'm catering to the U.S. audience. International promotional fees plus deposits for World Series of Darts and 167 Riyadh season events. Formal confirmation that the Ronnie O'Sullivan, amazing player, Academy license be renewed for a third year and that those invoices be paid now. All other funds owed to Matchroom for prior boxing events. There was also several boxing bouts that he wanted added to the card. I'm reading from those proposed but not yet signed bouts include a bantamweight unification between three division champion Jesse Ban Rodriguez and Mexico's WBC champion Christian Medina, a WBA secondary welterweight title fight between England's Jack Catterall and American Keyshawn Davis, and a WBA heavyweight champion pitting Murat Gaziev against Jarrell Big Baby Miller. So this is all going down, and all of a sudden we get a bit of Fury on the treadmill this morning, and he was working up a sweat, but working up some tirades as well. Can we please see Mr. Fury on the treadmill? Oh.
Quick update for you. Doesn't look like they're going to sign the fight, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. All because Eddie Hearn and that want more money. They've already had that much money off of Turkey in the last few years, Eddie and AJ, yeah? They've had boxing deals, they've had darts deals, they've had snooker deals, they've had everything, yeah? And yet, they've got the audacity and cheek of flea-bitten rats to ask for more money from old Turkey. That's give yous. Everything combined is they've had combined in the last couple of years. I tell you what, it's disgusting, money thirsty, pieces of shit. It is what it is. Same old cliche a decade later. Keep running, you little cowards.
he does say, keep running, you little cowards, as he's running Chuck. It's an interesting situation. What do you think of the whole imagery we're getting here from Tyson? It's unique.
It strikes me a little bit like you know when and then from the Eddie Hearn side of things, like when you have friends or whatever, and you're like, you're going to have a party, and one of the dudes gets excluded, and he's like, okay, you know what, then you can pay me back for all the stuff then that I've done for you over the years. You know, like, why don't you start paying me back? That's what it's almost like. It's this is one of those, this is just one of those crazy situations. I guess we should have seen this coming, though. Look at me all frozen and nice looking. I don't know where I see it.
What a ventriloquist.
I feel like we should have maybe seen this coming. You know, my son came up to me, I think, yesterday, and he's like, hey, it looks like MSG close to us here. Maybe we can go to this fight. And I'm like, well, let's wait and see a second, because, you know, people are saying this fight's going to happen, but we've heard this old, song and dance before, and something always happens where it doesn't happen, right? And then this morning, we're getting ready for all this stuff, and, for the crack, and you get this information that's coming in, and you see Fury go on there, and I'm like, my first thought is just, of course, this thing's going to go through this. It's a strange thing, man. I understand from a Hearn standpoint, you know, like, we're going to do this in the UK. This is what we agreed upon. There's a contract, with Joshua that we're trying to get. And like, you can see how this would be, especially when we're talking about Zuffa boxing, you know what I mean? And when we're talking about this, you can see how there might be some pushback and, you know, I understand the strategy of it, but for a fan of boxing, if you really wanted to see this fight, I think it's so far past, we were talking about this before, like how many of you guys still care at this point, you know, but yeah. Like it's so past, it's like when it was like a big relevant and magnitude fight where you're like, we have to see it, that at this point I'm like, God, it's just drama to me at this, you know. It's like at some point you're like, I don't care, either do the fight or don't, or do it in New York or do it in UK, I don't care. I know that like the UK deserves it because that's where it should be, but dude, I'm at that point where it's like, either you're doing it or you're not, right?
Ben, where are you? Where are you in the Fury Joshua escapade?
Flea bitten rats. That's the part that stood out to me. that's a good one, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if he'd have just called them rats, that doesn't quite register in your brain. You've heard it a million times. Heard people call each other flea bitten rats. However, you're like, oh, see, that's why you do these videos on the treadmill. It gets boring on the treadmill. It's monotonous. Yeah. We know that. But you get your brain turning, and who knows what's going to come out of there. I also like, it's enough of a change. MMA fighters, as you know, love to do these things from the front seats of their car.
Car.
Oh, that's where they do it.
It's a car
driving.
Industry.
Yeah.
That's the bane of Ariel Helwani's existence, by
I
the
know,
way.
Like. Man, I know.
Could you just pull over, please?
He's always like that. Can we just get somewhere and post up for long enough to do this interview? Jeez.
Yeah.
But, you know, this stuff, it kind of, once I saw that now we're getting into drama over everybody's supposed list of demands, I'm waiting to see something about a bowl of brown M&Ms thrown in there. It's so extensive. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, that's kind of the only way this could go, right? Like, that feels somehow like a natural next step in the evolution of this. Like, nothing's going to be easy about this. You can see that. There's no way we're just going to be like, you want to fight? You want to fight? Cool. How's next Friday? That work for you guys? All right, we'll see that. Like, it's not going to be that kind of a deal. And maybe we're just going to do this and not the fight at the end. Or maybe we're just going to keep like arguing about it and finding different ways to throw up hurdles for it. And then actually there will be a fight that is 15 years past its expiration date by the time we finally get it. But it just feels like that kind of situation where you're not going to get like a simple path to the waterfall.
Is this Kalshi thing a cardiograph, or is this an actual, what are we looking at here?
This is a real, this is for,
okay.
Look at the crack things moving in the background there, Chuck. Everything is moving apart from our faces. The chance of it happening, is that 70% chance it will happen?
Yeah.
Down, it's gone down. It was right up there
down.
In the 80s. Do you want more Tyson Fury on the treadmill? Because I believe we have some more of that if we want to keep it visually stimulating for the audience. Is that right, Jordan? Do we have more Tyson Fury on the treadmill?
And another thing, as for all these promoters saying Dana White's nothing to do with it, Dana White, why should he be involved? If Dana White wants to be involved, he can come on my side. He can be a part of me. Get in, Dana. You want to make the fight? You come on my side. Be an advisor. Be a trainer. Be a manager. Be whatever the fuck you want. All these wankers saying he should do it, he should do it. Welcome yous all the promoters in the world who want to be involved, come to me, join my team, I don't care. It does not matter who's involved, Bob Arum, Don King, Frank Warren, Eddie Earn, Dana White, TKO, Nick Khan, Turkey El Sheikh, whoever's involved, great, more the merrier. Let's get it on, let's get it on, no problem.
I feel like this is more encouraging, this one. You know what I mean? Let's get some new people involved. Let's see. Kalachi fight this year, as you can see, 70% down. It was up around the 80 mark. It is plummeting. But maybe they didn't see the second Tyson Fury video, because he seems to be welcoming people in now. Come and promote me, Tyson Fury. We do have a rebuttal from Eddie Hearn of Matchroom fame. I believe he spoke to IFL yesterday. And he wasn't exactly not swearing when he was talking either. Do we have that one there, George?
What Lance put in that story, which is correct, is that none of those points, not even the points about the fight, there's also a point on there about fights on the undercard, which we said, and Turkey El Sheikh said, we want Matchroom fights on the undercard, and we put forward three fights that we would like to propose for the card. Gassiev against Miller, Bam against Medina, I think the other one was Keyshawn against Catchell, yeah. Right? So there's nothing in that email that was sent that is like anything new. We're not asking for anything new. We're just asking for our contractual obligations to be honoured. Now, what Lance did put in that article, which was correct, the reason that I went off at Glazer, who is actually one of the most, I mean, I won't even say it because he's that irrelevant, but he's like, he comes out and says, this is not about a venue. This is about personal gain. You're saying that Joshua will only fight in America if you get the darts paid, if you get the snooker paid. Absolute bullshit. If you get these fights on the card, bullshit. The addendum requesting the changes does not have one of those points on raised in that apparent leaked email.
Where's it come from?
It's come from people that want to try and dress up a situation, to people that are trying to spin a story when the story couldn't be more straightforward. We signed for a fight. Honor the contract. That is all we're saying. And the contract states the fight must take place in the UK. And this is not about trying to get anything out of it, because if I wanted to, I'd put things in the addendum to, you know, that would be or could be lucrative to Matchroom. Anthony Joshua and his lawyer see the addendum, they approve the addendum, and the addendum has been sent. It does not feature any of the points on an email that's actually not even correct in its entirety, but certain points were raised regarding outstanding issues between Matchroom and Seller. So I'm sorry, Mr. Glazer, you're wrong again. Glazer, I don't know what, Rick, fucking whatever your name is. You're wrong again, because the addendum is sent and has nothing in there regarding that at all. And that is what I wanted to come on and clear up today.
Well, there you go. This is what Glazer said. Rick Glazer, the OG, nonetheless, is what he goes by on X. And I'm going to try and read this. And Ben, I want you to have a lot of patience, because, you know, I struggle with this kind of thing. At Eddie Hearn, your ridiculous demands and holding up Fury Joshua in New York isn't about Anthony Joshua or the UK. It's actually all about your personal gain, demands for you, for the darts, snooker, having the ring pay for your fights on their show, such as Gusev Miller, plus other big money bouts involving Jack Catterall, Bam Rodriguez, and other demands too numerous to mention. But none benefit Anthony Joshua or the UK. It's simply more baluba from you, Eddie, as you are clearly not the martyr you claim to be. Eddie! You aren't putting up any money. You're simply picking back off Turkey Al Sheikh and the ring. You're taking no risks, but making huge demands for additional personal gain. That doesn't benefit the man getting hit, Anthony Joshua. If you don't make this fight as it is, I will personally highly recommend that Turkey Al Sheikh cut off entirely for now and ever. Cut you off, excuse me. I have that ability, whether you think so or not. Test me, Eddie! To boxing enthusiasts and everyone reading this, please repost. This is on a need-to-know basis, and everyone needs to know. Ben, you know now. How do you feel about that?
It's a lot. It's a lot for me to know.
It's
honestly
an OG.
I feel like you're asking me to know a lot of things all at once, especially since nobody seems to agree on what we should know. I do like, you know, back to Tyson Fury's point of one thing I love that the video started with, and another thing, because yeah. That's when you know you're having a certain kind of time and they're on the treadmill. It makes me imagine like somebody
just
walking by on the outside of the room and hearing him yelling where it's Dana White over and over. And you're going, is he on a phone call? Is he talking to somebody in there? And
But he was going to go walk. I don't know.
when he's inviting everybody into the big tent of Tyson Fury Promotions, essentially, you're going, yeah, that's what boxing needs, is a few more cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah,
we don't have enough people involved in these ongoing negotiations. And you have all these people just kind of like arguing back and forth about what is or isn't being said there. And it just seems like I'm kind of with Chuck here, where I don't know who at this point, from a fan perspective, you'd just be sitting around going like, guys, let me know where you come down at the end of the day. Let me know when everybody is ready to walk out there to the ring and get themselves into a fist fight. And if you decide you're not going to do that, cool. But kind of leave me out of it until you have made a decision.
Do we need to know all the addendums? You know what I mean? Like,
addendum.
I don't even want to. I don't even really want to be, you know, anything that has an addendum, I'm like, you know, I'm out. So like, sort it out. Come back to us when you're done.
I got and hopefully we got a re-addendum max for my my brain capacity before I just tune all the way out.
Yeah.
Who do you think's trying to fuck with Hearn, though? Like, obviously, someone's throwing this out there. Like, this is, he's rattled, right? Like, he is personally replying to Rick Laser.
I mean, honestly, who could it be? I just don't even.
I reckon it could be.
I mean, nothing pops to mind.
Oh, well. The mystery remains. Maybe we could solve it someday.
Change that one to a TKO, baby, the way I put you away right there.
You did. You sent me. Let's get on to some MMA stuff. I've been writing about this Usman Nurmagomedov guy. People all watched his last fight. It was very good. He absolutely sparked Archie Colgan. Really fantastic display from a guy who's kind of... He has always been a great kickboxer, but because of that second name, your name is Usman Nurmagomedov, people expect you to be able to wrestle pretty well, and guess what? He can fucking do that too. He is undefeated. He had those two big fights with Paul Hughes in Dubai, and he is a massive figure in terms of that lucrative deal in Dubai. They have framed that around him, and he has delivered them all three of their major main events where starring Mr. Usman Nurmagomedov. As we saw in the aftermath of the Colgan fight, Jake Paul joined him in the ring, in the cage, should I say, and he was saying, this is our guy, he's the best in the world, he could smoke Gaethje right now, all this stuff. Usman promptly follows that up by paraphrasing here, well, you said you have all that money. You've been giving Dana a lot of shit. Now, time to show me the money. Interestingly, the inside, like, you know, industry talk, people are talking to each other all the time, but this guy, a lot of people feel like it's a foregone conclusion. He showed up at UFC 330. He's in the back there with Islam after his victory over Ian Machado Gary. But it is a very interesting thing, because obviously we've had Habib as lightweight champion, and that was father's plan, and that kind of went on to Islam. And then this could be, again, another Dagestan champion with the second name Nurmagomedov at the helm for UFC. And just to give you an idea, it's not me just blowing smoke up your arse. Listen to the man who's fought him for 10 rounds. Listen to the man who has sparred Ilya Topuria a number of times, Mr. Paul Big News Hughes, who's on the sidelines at the moment with a knee injury. But have a listen to what he says about Usman Nurmagomedov's skill set.
The only person in the UFC right now that has a chance against him is Topuria. I commented on that recently whenever he did, when he beat Colgan. Like, I know the guy. I've been in 10 rounds with him. I know his style, I know his capabilities, and I know the style required to beat him. The only people in the world that can beat him is myself and Ilya Topuria. I really believe that, because of the style. He is so elusive. His kicks are phenomenal. His wrestling is obviously fantastic. Right now, he beats Gaethje absolutely no problem at all. He could definitely be the champion of the UFC right now. And again, stylistically, I think the only one that gives him an issue there is Topuria.
Before we get onto this conversation, I think we should have a look at what John Martin said as well, because this merger between MVP and PFL, if you're looking at guys you need to keep this as interesting as possible before they sign anyone, it would be Usman. Obviously, we mentioned that the UFC have not been able to negotiate with him just yet. Let's have a listen to what John Morgan told Ariel Helwani on Wednesday.
Just to set the record straight, now the UFC has not given him an offer. They're not legally allowed.
They can't, right?
To.
Yeah, 90 days.
So we have an exclusive negotiating period. We're putting together an offer, and we're going to sit and we're going to talk with him. I think our offer will be competitive. it's really up to him. We would love to have him. We would love to keep him. I think there's still enough competition in the PFL, and that we'll be getting more and more fighters in, that we could keep him competitively challenged over the next several years.
When you saw him, though, this past weekend, how did you feel?
Saw
Usman, DC's coming up to him.
Oh, that was all staged. That was all bullshit. I mean, come on, they're parading him around, like putting him on the screen.
What do you think of Bellator, last Bellator lightweight champ?
Yeah.
Not current PFL. What do you think of that?
I laugh at all of this. Yeah. This is all kind of fun and games.
Well, there we have it. And we should say, lads, if you have just tuned into The Crack, we are having a bit of issue with the old video here. We're going to be putting assets up, but the usual three box or the single shots of myself, Chuck and Ben are not here at the moment. We are trying to work through the kinks. Bear with us, but you can still hear our beautiful voices, of course.
That's a tremendous loss for the fan base, right?
Yeah. Like
not being able to see Ben.
This is, my agent is going to have your ass for this.
He's wearing a tank top too today. It's fucking crazy, to be honest with you. Chuck, this is a situation where, like, I just feel like you hear the way Martin's talking there. He's kind of saying, we can compete, this kind of stuff. Obviously, he's not, like, Ariel is not wrong. Like, it felt like Usman was being paraded around the UFC during UFC 330. Like, look, this is going to be our guy soon. How important is it for them? Just, like, in terms of, like, planting their flag, like, this is the kind of business we're in, MVP, PFL. How important do you think it is for them to try and secure Usman? And do you think they have a chance?
I mean, symbolically, it's huge. Because this was PFL. The whole subtext of these, the PFL on Netflix was kind of this, you know, it was this UFC's not paying their fighters. It became this almost like, we need to create this because UFC is stale. It's not paying its fighters. They're doing this whole thing. So now you get an organic situation where you have a free agent come up who's going to be an expensive free agent coveted by the UFC. And especially now with this merger with PFL and MVP. So, like, you've got these two entities working together. What is the whole kind of identity they're trying to create? This would be the first test. It'd be like, are they going to pay a guy more than the UFC? Because this is what the thesis is, right? And I think it's vital. Like what you mentioned, like just kind of the Middle East, what's been kind of going on in that. But not just that. You have Islam on the one side of the ledger who's from this dynasty, you know, of these Dagestani guys. Like, he's over here and he's the one remaining kind of invincible still left holding his reign as a top pound for pound on the one side. You want to be able to keep the other guy because if they're correct, and I think everybody assumes like, oh, if he comes over here, could he beat Gaethje? Yeah, he could beat Gaethje. He would be favored in that fight. You know, you see that sort of thing. I think it's really important to keep that piece on your side. From a fan's perspective, that's tough because, you know, if you're looking at Nurmagomedov on the one side, he's like, well, he's kind of cleaned out that division, or, you know, he's kind of cleaned out everybody at PFL. But if he comes over the UFC, wow, that partition is down. You've got all these fascinating matchups you could make right away. It'd be great theater. And obviously, like, you would have that sort of dynasty, that baton pass down from one guy to the next. And that would be unique to the UFC and to MMA in general. So you can understand why the UFC would covet this. You know, I could see the UFC coming correct to, like, you know, to basically, you know, maybe against their own precedent, to basically say, we're going to take this guy, though, because we know this will hurt you. This will hurt, you know, it's going to kick a leg out from what you're doing. But, dude, if I'm PFL MVP and that promotion going strong as they start into 2027, that's priority number one, would be getting him back.
Yeah. Ben, what do you think is more important to the UFC here? Securing a new Nurmagomedov who could potentially dominate at lightweight, or, as Chuck said, crippling PFL and MVP right out the gate by taking one of their biggest star, their most marketable name at this point, you'd think?
Well, you know, I think that it's interesting when you look at it from PFL's perspective, because there's got to be a point at which you would pay so much to keep Usman Nurmagomedov that you wouldn't be making it back, that it wouldn't be a good idea for you anymore. And I would think that at least part of the UFC's goal might be to push them a little bit over that point. Because as you kind of raised in your column on it, PC, the calculation for him is going to include a couple different things. It's what can you still do in PFL? Obviously, you're going to get paid one way or another, you know? And these guys, they do seem to care about legacy. They aren't just probably looking at, you know, if these guys are paying you $1 million and these guys are paying you $1,000,001, then that's the one you go with. They are probably looking at it and being like, we'd like to have him over there in the UFC, because in the MMA world, still being able to walk around and say you're the UFC champion means something that it doesn't mean to be able to say you're the PFL champion. You know, that same conversation fighters would talk about how you want to be in the UFC because every time you get on a plane, somebody asks you what you do and you got to be like, have you seen the UFC? So it's like so that, true, but it's different. Yeah. They want to be able to say, you've heard of the UFC, right? I'm the champion of that. And it just carries like a weight for them. And I think that will factor into it a little bit for Usman. But I also think on the other side for PFL, you're going, hey, yeah, it's a bad look. You don't want to lose the guy who might be just pound for pound the best fighter that you have. You also don't want to lose him because he has that regional importance for you with this deal you have to put on these events in Dubai. But you also have to realize, look, if we're trying to be the sort of challenger brand, the you know, competitor to the UFC.
Co-leader.
We need people who are, you know, needle movers, to borrow that phrase. Is he a big needle mover? I think that he is big to the people already in the MMA bubble. I think we all, the hardcores, we all know who he is and we appreciate how good he might be. We also are going to look at it at a certain point if he stays in PFL and be like, hey, who is there to, who could you beat that will do something that you haven't already proven? You know,
we might already be there.
Yeah, we might. To be fair. Unless PFL manages
Archie
to go.
Colgan last time.
Yeah. So it's like, who can PFL give you that would advance you in people's minds? And for PFL, then that you might get into a calculation where you'd be like, it costs so much to keep this guy. And if we keep him, he can't really do a whole lot more for us. Whereas if we took that money and we spent it on somebody who is probably an objectively worse fighter, but a bigger name or a more interesting name or a name that will just like get some new viewers in the door over here, it might be a better use of your money.
It's so tough, man, because it's like building organic names within your organization is a hard thing to do. They've done a decent job of that. I know you outlined in your column, like other people who they've kind of, you know, Cedric Doumbé and like in their markets kind of like blowing them up. And I think that that's a good idea, but it's very tough, you know, when you're fighting Colgan, you know what I mean? Like you're fighting a guy nobody knows. Like it was, that was one of the quieter, like that's one of their bigger events. It's got Dakota DeChiva on it. It's got Usman, but not a lot of people were talking about it, you know? And I'm like, that's where this whole thing comes in. And I think it's a fascinating sort of situation because also, you know, the manager of this whole thing is Ali Abdelaziz, you know? And I think that his relations with the UFC have always, you know, it's going to tend that way. So when you say that it seems like a slam dunk that he's heading to the UFC and the UFC showing him on the broadcast and, you know, all this stuff is going on, that certainly feels like the inevitability here. But I do think that the PFL should do everything they can. I mean, I'm only saying it because you're at a moment where you're putting your money where your mouth is, right? Like you were downing the UFC's pay structure. So if you're not coming correct,
right?
Yeah, to be the first gesture. So I'm like, That's where it becomes like this symbolic thing. I'm like, if you're trying to be, and of course, now that they're merged, maybe their philosophies are going to change here. But I'm just based on what we know, I think that this would be the first, like, this would tell everybody, like, yeah, we mean business by retaining him.
It's funny you mentioned the Ali Abdelaziz thing because yesterday there was this tweet going around. You know, one of those viral bullshit tweets that go up and they say, it's already done. Usman has re-signed all this stuff, and they were crediting Jake Paul for who did not put this out. It was just one of these bullshit reports. And I was like, are you that stupid that you think that Ali is not even allowing him to speak to the UFC? There is no negotiating. Like, he's not even entered the period where he can negotiate with these guys. He's just going to be like, oh no, we're going straight away. It's out there for sure. Like, Dubai is a big thing for them though. And as far as I know, you know, they want championship bouts. They want those big banner events, and Usman was just naturally there. He comes in as champion from Bellator. He is an incredible fighter. He and the rivalry of Paul Hughes, they obviously borrowed heavily from the Dagestan v Ireland thing, with then Conor McGregor and Paul Hughes ending up in a spat after the first one in classic Irish fashion, Team Ireland going and turning on each other. But I think they might look to put Patrick Habarora in there. Habarora has had some massive events in France and in Belgium.
He looks good.
He's really good, but he's also just really marketable. Like, he has a massive fan base. I don't know if they're going to be willing to travel. Like Belgium, France, a lot different than Belgium to Dubai or France to Dubai. But he is very good. The only problem with him is he is not in the championship running yet. His last fight was against Benson Henderson, who's 42. He shadow wrestled him in seconds, of course. But funnily enough, there is more on the Dagestani conveyor belt because a dude fought on the undercard of Usman's last fight, Amru Magomedov. He is very like Usman in terms of, right, we're seeing him grappling here in the images, but this guy kicked the shit out of Alvarez. Like, this was Alvarez just kind of succumbing to torturous punishment on the feet before he just kind of got on top of him and nailed him. I don't know anything about this dude other than he fights like a motherfucker. But
and he trains with Khabib and those guys, you know.
And he's in that weight class, I believe, as well. Let me just double check that. I do believe he is. But incredible. They just have endless amounts of these bearded gentlemen who beat the fuck out of people.
Can I ask you guys something, PC, I guess you specifically, like, you saw Paul Hughes basically saying, you know, myself or Topuria? What do you think of that? Like, do you think, like, it's a fun thing, like, but do you think that, who else can, like, Armon, like, you know what I mean? Like, who else competes with him? But do you think he has that potential to go in there and beat everybody, or do you see other guys who are, take him?
Like, Gaethje is the untangible things, right? Like, where it's like he's gonna bring you to a place you've never been before and you can't train for it and you're just in a fight with a fucking, like, something from a sci-fi movie that just keeps getting stronger as you lose energy. Like, that's a kind of an intangible thing where you can't really measure that. But the thing I think about when I think of Armin is, like, I see him as one-dimensional compared to Usman. The thing with Usman is, like, he can outstrike dudes who want to grapple with him. And he can take down strikers, you know, like he does it all at a really, really good level. The only thing I'd say is, and I know we all have examples of this, is it's a different ballgame in the UFC. I believe Paul Hughes is an astronomical fighter, and I think he proved that in his fights with Usman. I thought he won the fights, very, very close fights. Don't slight anyone who has them for Usman, just incredibly close. But we've seen it before. We've seen it with Eddie Alvarez. We've seen it with a lot of dudes who come across to the UFC. You can dominate in a different promotion for years, but when you get to the big dance, it's a completely different story, right? Like, it just, that's how it seems to work out, right, Ben?
Yeah, it is. And it's also, it's tough to do this sort of thing where it feels so theoretical, where we're going, look at what he's able to do against a completely different crop of people and try to imagine how it will map on to a roster somewhere else.
Imagine Alfie Davies is Justin Gaethje.
But it also, like, it's tough because it doesn't work, and it can be difficult in both ways, because we've done it before where we've seen somebody do really well in a different organization and then they come over to the UFC. And for whatever reason, they just can't buy a win. And
gotcha.
they just go downhill real quick. But then we've also seen where it's like we are not giving somebody the credit they deserve just because they don't have UFC written on their gloves when they're winning these fights. And so you don't really know until you can put them in there and you can find out. You're also wondering, though, I think that the stylistic question is an important one, because you think about, if you were to come over, what kind of fights he'd end up having in the UFC, and, you know, how then what they'd choose to do with him right out of the gate, because there are some fights that you could think about for him where you could be like, he'd do really, really well in those.
Yeah.
And then there are other ones where, like, even against people who might be lower ranked, where you're just sort of like, I could see that being a potential problem. Mm-hmm. You know? So I don't know. I think that the part of it that really interests me is, you're going to find out, does the UFC still want to be in this business where we go out and we get free agents? Because that doesn't happen that much anymore, where you get somebody who has built themselves into a big free agent somewhere else, and then the UFC wants to sign them away when their contract comes up. The UFC has gotten so much better at just, like, funneling its own people up through a developmental system. And we see them all the way through their process of development. There just aren't that many instances anymore where you're essentially buying a fighter away from somebody else. Does the UFC still want to do that? Does it still think it's worth that money? And how much
it means more to the fighter to come up, because for the obvious reasons, you know, to be in the UFC.
How much of Parnas, though, right? They did, right? Like, they threw down for Parnas.
And And you also saw him be like, all right, we'll give Robles to Spain another shot. Now let's take a heavyweight away from MVP and let's give him another look and let's maybe matchmake him a little more to his strengths, you might say.
Yeah, you mentioned, Ben, you mentioned though, like the legacy seems to mean a little bit more to these Dagestani guys. Like if say the UFC was like, we know you want to be over here. You know, your manager wants you over here. We're not going to kill the, we're not going to like give you, you know, whatever. Huge contract, but we're going to give you an automatic title shot. Do you think that would be enough for them, or they're like, you don't even have to get there, like you can just come right in and you can fight for the title?
I mean, I guess it depends what the gap is in pay between what the PFL is offering, what the UFC is offering. But I do think the way that the UFC has in the past, sometimes what you'd hear from managers, the way they would structure some of these offers is to play to a fighter's ego in a sense by being like, here's what the contract is. It's one if you win. It looks one way if you imagine I'm going to come in the UFC and I'm going to win my next 7 or 8 fights in a row, and then the money is huge. And if you don't, then the money is way, way smaller than that. And so when you present that stuff to the fighters, this is why show win as a payout model works on fighters, is because you tell them, hey, you get 80 and 80, man. And they're going, so 160 is what I get, because I'm not planning on losing a single fight ever again. I'm done losing fights. I'll never do that again.
All fighters, what do I, every single fighter in the world.
That's why this works on them, is because like that's what they hear in their heads when you offer that. And so it's like you could offer him something like that, where you're just like, hey, we think you're going to be really successful, and here is what the successful version of this contract looks like, and that's the only version he'll pay attention to.
I mean, if Ali wanted, it was game.
But this is what I was going to think, right? But, yeah, Ali.
But if he wanted to offer, like, or not offer, if he was suggesting, right, like, Gaethje gets, you know, he just goes up and he fights Islam. If Islam gets through Gary, let's do that fight. Even though they're both his guys, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, well, Gaethje's kind of on the way up. Why not do this other like, why not lobby for this other thing? You're still keeping it in the family, you know what I mean? And as your Twilight Man disappears into the sunset, it's like you're still keeping it. That's all I'm saying. I mean, there would be motivation that way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Just a reminder for anyone that's just tuning in now, we are having some visual difficulties with the three box of me, Ben, and Chuck. Unfortunately, I know how you all love to look at us. And we're going to be doing our best with the old visuals during this episode today. And we will do our best. Great Jordan there in the back doing everything he can to keep this a visually stimulating show. Moving on to our next, the next on the list was Dean Thomas. Some people call him Din, and it really fucking annoys me.
I call him Din, yeah.
But Chuck, you wrote about this. You wrote a great column 2 days ago. And I would say things have developed since then, but give us your impression of what happened there, because it was a ludicrous situation for those who didn't see it, where Dean Thomas goes on the broadcast after Jillian Robertson loses and basically says, well, that's me. I'm finished. Took her as far as I could go. Like, I mean, I doubt she's out of the shower and the dude is saying this. Tell me what your reaction was.
It just seemed, and Ben, you probably talked to Dean Tom like over the years too, right? Like this is a guy that you sort of know through the game for a long time. I've talked to him, especially back in his fighting days. He's always been kind of an upright, you know, he's always been a dude who gives you what's on his mind, but like he's been an upright guy. And I'm like, this just seems so weird to me, you know, like as it was unfolding. And I think it's because, you know, as Ariel kind of updated and he talked to Jillian. I don't bring a shot, but as he kind of updated that situation, and she's like, you know, that doesn't seem like a true apology. He went on his show and made the apology before he even talked to me. I mean, that stuff was so, it felt like a very selfish thing. And this is why I was like, I got to say something, man. I mean, it's just, this just felt like a very, very out of character thing for Dean Thomas. And the reason I prompted is because I was like, is it because he's serving two masters or even three? If you count the podcast and the, you know, the desk, working the desk and cornering fight, is that too many hats to wear? You know, like, are you going and doing too much? And now you're serving the one ahead of your other. And I felt like that was something that was kind of going on here, where he turned it about him as he went back to the desk. It became all about him. I just found it very tasteless, and, you know, like, people have weighed in on this a lot. I just found it very out of character for him, but also just the fact that he went on like his podcast and made the apology there and not talked to Jillian. And then, like, you know, at the end, I didn't even know this when I was writing. I didn't even know about the part where he's talking about Sean Brady and like, yeah, I'll probably corner him though. You know, I mean, that's just, It was just a horrible look, man. It was a horrible look, and I didn't see a ton of contrition, if I'm being honest, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that I've known Dean and talked to him over the years, and I always appreciate that you can call him up. You can get kind of a straight shooter approach. He's going to tell you what he thinks, and I think that maybe worked against him here. I also, my initial read on it was, in the aftermath of that fight, especially if you're the coach and the corner man, you're bummed out. You know, you're disappointed, sure. You're upset, and that's maybe not the time to be talking into a microphone, especially if you're going to be the guy who says what's on his mind, because what's on your mind right then might be some stuff you don't want to share. And I thought that was maybe what was going on there at first. The other thing, though, is that I remember talking to Trevor Whitman about this many years ago, where when I was following, you know, his work with the old Grudge team that was training out of that gym back then. And there was an instance where I can't even remember what it was over, but it was something of him sort of voicing somewhat publicly some problems that he was having, like the negative effects it was having on him, like some of the stuff that was going on with guys on the team. And the fighters reacted poorly to that. And it was like kind of immediate, and it was kind of strange to me, where I was just like, wait a minute, why are these guys not even close to being there for him the way as he is there for them? And it didn't seem to surprise him. And he said something to me to the effect of, like, the coach doesn't get to have problems. That's the way the fighters look at it. They look at it like, you are supposed to be the rock that is always in the same spot, that we can lean on, that we can depend on. And when you turn out to be a human being also, we don't like it. It makes us uncomfortable, and it leaves us feeling kind of lost, and they just like want to move away from it. And so I think that there's sort of a similar reaction here, where it's like, we can understand, you know, the fighter being bummed out. We don't think about the coaches being bummed out after a title fight loss. We definitely don't think about it hurting for them. You know, it's stinging, the preparation, everything that they were in there, the frustration that they might feel afterwards. And so we don't have a lot of patience for it. We don't have a lot of tolerance to hear their complaints after something like that. I thought, honestly, the worst part about it was not just saying, you know, I mean, it's not great to go out there and be like, this fight was so bad, I never want to do corner work again. It's like, I was on a high school football team once where we were bad, and one of our coaches retired at the end of the season, and it was like, oh, okay, I think that was us, you guys. I think that we drove him out of this. That's not a great feeling. But the part where he was like, you know, I wanted to take Jillian as far as she could go, and I think this is it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that stings. Yes. And that's one of the things that I've learned, like, fighters hate the most. The same reason why no one likes to be called a gatekeeper. No one likes to be called a journeyman. It's not because gatekeeper, when you think about it, not a bad term. You got to be pretty damn good to be the gatekeeper. A gatekeeper is necessary in this sport to show you, you know, who's elite, who's ready to fight for the title, who's not. But they don't like anything that limits their potential or tells them, you are this and you will never be more than this. They always want to think, hey, this is what I am right now. This is where I am right now. But if I put in the work, if I get better, I can move to another level. And anytime you tell them, this is it, above this point, you will not rise. They hate that.
You're so right, man. It's like he was throwing in the towel on a person's potential, like, which is the whole thing that they, you know, like that everybody operates. The delusions stay, you know, they've stayed in this business a long time for these reasons. Everybody thinks that they can turn around. And, you know, we've seen people, you know, Ian Garry loses and he points to Justin Gaethje. Well, he's 38 and he's got a champion. I'm 28. I've got 10 more years. You know, that you feed your mind the way you want. But for somebody to be saying like, nah, that's as good as she's ever going to get. That's it. I mean, that was brutal. It's so brutal for a fighter to hear that.
Yeah, it's I don't have a relationship with Dean the way you guys do. But I've always appreciated, as you guys bring up, like, he is forthright. He says unpopular things sometimes because that's how he feels. And I have admired him for that for many years. But am I wrong in thinking this feels like people are waiting for a situation like this to come out and just stick a fork in him to some degree? Because I've seen a lot.
Like a fighters, lot of you people, mean? Fighters are like just people.
Sean's like, a lot of, like, obviously a lot of people disagree with this. I see Sean Strickland. I've seen several other fighters kind of come in and be like, well, this is what Dean is. Have you noticed that, or am I just, or is that my ex algorithm playing up on me in this?
I have no. I did see the Sean Strickland stuff. I've seen other people, and especially, hey, look, there we are. I've seen fans are like the kind of, what would you call them? The people who run accounts that they're sort of in between the media space, and they're like, but they're mostly just fans.
UFC media. Yeah, all of them.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thank you. I thought there was a term for that. I've seen a lot of that. I've seen, you know, the pushback. It's just, I think that's just our times, though. It feels like no matter what happens, if you slip up and you do something, man, there's going to be a gang coming after you, you know, these days. But
yeah, especially if, like we said, you are the person who has said what's on his mind and been, you know, giving your unvarnished opinion in the past. As Chuck and I have found out, you don't have to give too many unvarnished opinions before people start to develop their own opinions about you. They don't like hearing it necessarily. They'll get mad at you. And so I think that maybe there's some of that, just other people's years of built up frustrations waiting for an opening. And then when they see it, they're not going to let it slide.
I've been called a bias looser a lot of times, Ben. I don't know if you've ever been called that, a bias looser.
Yeah. I mean, to which I say, lucky guess.
Is there anything to be said? And I got to say, Mr. Schaub is having himself a comeback. He's doing very well. He is weighing in strongly in MMA in ways that he hasn't for years. But he kind of, like, he put up a video the other day, and he was kind of like, is this in a way like a positive for Jillian? Like, obviously she's lost the fight anyway. What he says afterwards is inconsequential. But does this give her an identity? Like, she becomes a sympathetic figure, and everyone's kind of like, yeah, you fucking
this did occur to me. You know, I do think that it might have that somewhat of an effect, right? Like, we'll see. We'll see how it all works, but let's face it. I even mentioned this, I think, because you were out gallivanting, PT. So Ben stood in for the our roundtable, and we'd mentioned, is this one of the quieter title fights in UFC history, like with no buzz around it, right? Like, let's face it. The reason is because McKenzie, we were like, I don't know if she really is good enough to hold a belt, but circumstantially she's got it. And then Jillian, who cares about Jillian, is it? People are going to care coming into her next fight. I think that will work in her favor. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of a sympathy thing going on there. And I think there's, you know, now you can be defiant of what your coach, your ex-coach, thought of your potential, right? Now you can actually be defiant of it, which becomes like part of a backstory or narrative, right?
Yeah. It's, it'll be interesting. Let's see. Maybe it all works out for everyone, Chuck. You know what I mean? Maybe. Maybe this is exactly what we needed.
The fight game always works. Everything works out in the end. You know how this is.
It does, but not quite for Edson Barboza, who lost his retirement fight.
Look at that second.
Ben wrote about this, and it's a really, really great article he's wrote. We were hitting some bangers this week, boys, but we weighed in on Edson in the media aftermath of UFC 330. Ben, take us through your emotions. One of the most violent kickers of all time hangs him up.
Yeah, you know what really got me when I was watching it wasn't a surprise, I think, that he was going to lose this fight. It seemed like we knew what we were doing matchmaking-wise. We take 40-year-old Edson Boza and put him in there against a 30-year-old hitter. We're trying to get a certain kind of outcome from that, and you got it. And it's mean. It's the fight game always loves to feed the old to the young. That's kind of how it's always been. But when he got on the mic afterwards, and, you know, you could hear the emotion in his voice, he was sort of near tears when he started, and he said something along the lines of, like, you know, I always give you my best. Every single fight, I always came out here and give you your best, and I hope you enjoyed it. And he's like, something about the phrasing of that, especially a guy standing there, his face is all swollen, his eye looks terrible, and he's standing there being like, well, I hope it was fun for you guys, you know, like, and it is something absolutely true, like, where it's like, he had, what, like 33 fights in the UFC, been there in the UFC uninterrupted.
Made a lot of money.
For the last 15 years, and saying, like, you know, I always gave you my best, and you're like, you know what? That is absolutely true. No one ever said about Edson Barboza, he showed up, didn't look prepared.
True.
Didn't look like his heart was in it this time. You can never say that about the guy. And that's what kind of made me reflect on how the UFC needs people like this. Mm-hmm. Like, he was never a champion. He never fought for a title. He was never even really like a top contender. But you knew the name Edson Barboza. You remembered some of those highlights. You knew what you were going to get out of him. You could put him on an undercard somewhere, and we would look at it and be like, well, all right, we're going to get an Edson Barboza fight out of this night, so that's pretty good. You know, he's got 10 fight of the night bonuses. That tells you something about the kind of style he was bringing. And you need those guys that are, you know, a
decade and a half veteran of the UFC just showing up, giving you good hard fights and giving you that kind of effort every single time. And I think that we are not that great as a sport at recognizing those guys. Yeah. We are so intently focused on champions, on who's the best. It's always just like a question of the pecking order. And to be reminded that we need those guys who are going to show up, fight hard, give you a good time. That also, like, the guys for whom, like, a win over Edson Barboza means something. It propels you up. You look at the list of people he's fought. You know, Habib, Justin Gaethje, Paul Felder, all these guys where you're just like, these were, like, it was important moments in people's career when they fought Edson Barboza.
Yeah, it was sort of like,
you need to have those guys.
Like, it was Matt Brown back in the day, you know, like, you could, if he was on the middle of a card or whatever, and you'd be like, this card is, oh, wait, Matt Brown's on. This is not, you know, it would almost swing your opinion on a full card because you're like, well, that's going to be fun. And, or you could plug him in like that. Remember that Eric Silva one that Matt Brown had was like a main event? They're like, that you could plug him into a situation like that. And it still worked. Like, he was one of those dudes. And I think that, you know, that Terry Etim, you know, when you see that type of knockout, or the Dariush one, where he just springs up and, like, hits him with the knee, or I know, Pizza, we were talking about that one at the Cosmopolitan where he fights Tony Ferguson. I mean, these types of fights, you know, Darren Elkins came and went just at, like, a little bit, like, what is it, a week or two ago. And you sort of, like, you know, they're the guys that you plug in. And, you know, they're a name, but, like, Barboza was almost, not to diminish, you know, Elkins, he had some fun fights too, but, like, Barboza was one of those guys you knew you might be seeing something that you would be talking about in 20 years. And I always think that that guy who brings that kind of excitement, he's a huge value to the UFC and a thankless kind of task, too, to always produce that. And he did that all the way to the end. And how about the fact that he couldn't see for his last three fights? What the hell's that all about, PT?
Oh, man. It's, do you know what? That's, like, everything you've just said, right? Like, how important a fighter like Edson Barboza is. 33 fights, Ben has said. And just being that guy that when he's on a card and he's matched the right way, you're like, oh, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be amazing. Edson Barboza is fighting. What really annoys me is he's come out and he's told Arrow he's lost the vision in his right eye, I believe it is. And he's contested his last three bouts with no vision in his right eye. And it was against Lerone Murphy that it happened. But we'll have a show probably in the not too distant future where we're talking about fighter pay and we're saying, like, we have to fucking get these guys paid. And then no one will think back to this guy being like, I fought three fights with one fucking eye, basically. Like, look at the damage this man's taken. Like, you're not fighting 33 times in the UFC just because you love it. You're fighting because you need to earn money too. Like, if you're an elite boxer fighting like 33 times or whatever, you're probably not hanging around until you're 40. You know, if you've made money the way a lot of guys do, it's just, it's a sad one for me, really. You know, seeing him talking to Ariel like that, and as much as he absolutely deserves to be celebrated, it kind of, like, sometimes you just have a sad feeling about retirements. And this is kind of one of them for me. Him disclosing that kind of made me feel a certain kind of way. Have I got the tone wrong here, boys?
Well, the thing that I thought was very telling was him saying, please, other organizations, don't contact me. Don't contact me. Don't contact my manager. Don't offer me any fights. And, like, the unstated part of that is, because, damn it, I might mess around and accept it. And, like, I might say yes. So, and I know I shouldn't. I know it's not good for me to be here anymore. I know I need to find my way out of this sport. And please don't be the guy who, when you see me walking past the bar and you know I'm trying to quit drinking, says, come on in for a quick one. You know, like, this, don't
all
don't
right,
slide
what's it
going to
hurt one more?
You know,
it's such a peasy move. It's unbelievable.
That, to me, tells you something about, like, the nature of this sport, because it's like the guy is like, he's trying to get clean from MMA. Please don't make it any harder on him by offering him another fight.
You think David Feldman's going to be like, oh, shoot, is that you, Edson? I didn't know I was calling you. But while I've got you on the phone, you know what I mean?
He's bringing the shit out of me. Are you joking me? We've got a lot of action this weekend, lads. Yeah. We've got UFC Sacramento. We have Anthony Fluffy Hernandez versus Gregory Rodriguez in the main event. Sergey Spivak v. Vitor Pereira, the one you've been waiting for, Ben. RDR is back. He's fighting Roman Dolidze, Mason Jones, one of the most violent men across that Atlantic Ocean, for you guys, that is. An amazing, he's the Welsh Justin Gaethje, as far as I'm concerned. He's against Markel Medeiros. Lots of fun fights there on that card.
You like that card, huh? Sacramento.
Yeah, let's say, yeah.
Home of East Sacramento State University that takes on Ben's college team over there in Montana, right? Like, isn't that the rival?
Right now? Are we going to do this right now? Because Ben hasn't just been writing about ye old combat sports this weekend.
Yeah.
Ben pulls up with an article for The Pulp all about his beloved Grizz, which is, again, I can't stress this enough, a great read, but you don't expect Ben to be showing up at a fundraising golf tournament to speak to the luminaries.
This dude's showing up all over. He's on literary magazines. Like, he's all the books being put out. Look at this guy.
Did you have a polo shirt on? Did you have a polo shirt on? Did you have a shirt? Like,
you say golf tournament, you're picturing the wrong thing. Because especially when I say that this took place at the Cut Bank Golf and Country Club, what you're picturing is not what it was. It's a very different environment out there.
Wait, is this the one you sent a picture of? And it was like a desolate, like, there was like a tumbleweed in there?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Right. I sent you guys the picture when I drove out there for that. It was an interesting story to work on. I've spent months kind of doing this just because the situation changed so rapidly. You know, I started out doing some interviews on this in January. In February, the longtime head football coach here announced his retirement, and then 5 days later popped up as the defensive coordinator somewhere else. And so you're like, okay, that's not what that word means.
Sneaky.
But it was really interesting just to sort of look into the way money is reshaping college sports. And there's, you know, a lot of interesting elements to it, because it's, you know, Chuck, you, I'm sure, remember how all the time we were growing up, it was a mortal sin to pay college athletes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the thing. There was always rumors of people doing it. If you got caught, though, then you were going to be in big, big trouble. I point out in this thing, the whole scandal around SMU back in the 80s, and they were paying guys, it was like the entire payroll that they got the NCAA death penalty for was like $61,000. And now he's around. For the people on the team who were being paid, that was the amount they got caught. And now you turn around and people are going, man, isn't it amazing? Indiana got a national championship football team, only cost around an estimated $23 million. Good work by them. And you're looking at Notre Dame going to cross $40 million this year, and they're
fighting Irish, baby.
What they're expected to pay. Like, that's really, it's a crazy, crazy shift that's happened so fast. And you can tell, you get this sense talking to people where they're like, we don't love it. It's a completely different world. We don't know where it's headed. We're all in this arms race that we can't get out of. But we also can't be the first ones to step out of it and be like, we don't like this anymore, because you will fall behind immediately. Mm-hmm. And it has like knock-on effects for the way the rest of your university works. It's a big thing that I noticed in doing this is how you look at the promotional materials from the University of Montana, from a lot of other schools now. What they're trying to sell their students on is the experience of college here. We know it's gotten a lot tougher to tell you, if you come and you do 4 years here, you will get this degree and that will get you this job. Nobody can really promise you that anymore. They'd be lying, and they still do sometimes promise that. Yeah. What they can promise you is like, hey, man, you could be rock climbing and kayaking in the river. You get to play hacky sack out on the... Yeah, like, you get to do all this stuff. You'll have a great time going to school here for 4 years. And that's something you can actually promise. And part of that promise is, won't it be fun to be out there tailgating on a Saturday afternoon with a Miller Lite in your hand, ready to go into the stadium with 20,000 other people?
You can personally attest to how fun that is.
It's a great time. I look forward to it.
As he said it. You know?
I look forward to it all year long. I can't wait. I got my tickets for the first game coming up, and I can already taste the fireball. You know? It's great.
That's how they do it, BT.
I need to fucking do one tailgate with you guys at some point in my life. We never had one. They had a tailgate in Dublin for the NFL one. We were just standing in a bar getting shit-faced. So I was like, I thought it'd be more than this. I thought it'd be barbecue.
That's kind of what it is.
Well, I do that every day.
Pizza, are you going to tailgate at Croke Park, like, or whatever that place is that you keep talking about?
I might. I reckon the police are going to have the place locked down beforehand. They're terrified of boxing events in Ireland. They really are. It's going to be interesting, dude. I was there for that, like having a look, trying to work on something. I was talking to Al Shadi about it. Like, you know, the way, and completely validly, like people would say to you, like, why does Croke Park mean so much to Irish people? And you can't actually answer that. You're just like, well, it just does, okay? So we're going to try and do something with that. I'm putting the feelers out, trying to talk to different people. Not very successful thus far, but I've got about 9 days to rustle something together here. And I plan on doing so. Go and check out Ben's article on the Grizz. It's on The Pulp. It is very, very good. He should share it out after this, maybe in his stories on IG or on X or something, so people can see it. But that isn't the only fight card we have this weekend. We have Chris Cyborg's retirement bout, if you could believe that. I don't know if I do, against Caitlin Vieira. That's, of course, the PFL. We were talking about earlier. It's in Tampa, Florida. Another great place to tailgate, I'd imagine. And Gadzi Rabadanov is there. That's the other guy that's in the top five of the lightweight division that Usman hasn't faced, but probably won't because he's his teammate. Toilet Santos is on the card. Luke Trainer's on the card. We're all gonna be tuning in for Cyborg to be like Cyborg.
Do we have a Kalshi like is she really gonna retire? I want to see that. Like, it's got to be dipping, right? Like, she's already kind of cooling this. Like, look at that headline. She's already kind of like, nah, maybe, probably retire. No, probably. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see that type of thing.
She's gonna just pop up on this MVP situation, right? Like. You
that's
know.
What I or Coker. I mean, Coker's coming back into the game. You're like, they're best buddies, you know.
Yeah, that's that one's on. We got Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. A great fucking card. A great fight, should I say, at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. And
they're buddies, right?
Yeah, they trained together. Now, they didn't seem like buddies at the press conference, which makes me feel like the whole thing was fabricated. You know? Yeah. Like, they're like, let's go.
It's upstairs. Unusual for the fight game to do something like that, where they fabricate.
I shouldn't have spoke. I shouldn't have said that out loud. I mean, allegedly, it looked a bit sus. But who are you picking there, if you don't mind me asking, Joe?
Rolly. Like, I was there when he beat Garcia, and I was like, I didn't give him much of a chance. He's a tough dude, man.
I'm going
Rolly. I'm leaning that way.
Yeah. Ben, what are you doing?
I'll go with whatever Chuck goes. I feel like he's been paying closer attention on this one than I have.
Teofimo's head wasn't right in that last one. I will say that. That's what he says anyway, you know. So, you know.
That's the beauty of him.
Yeah.
Sean Brady's fighting wrestling Jordan Burroughs on RAF 12. Do you think Dean will be there for that one, or more MMA on a specific thing?
I don't know. But I like how Marab, like, even with the fights coming up, he's like, nah, man, there's just too much time between the time when I got to take off my shoes and fight again. I got to just stay busy. Like, he just keeps going. Last time, was it the last time his nose looked like a Picasso, you know? It's like his nose was at a complete, you know, curvature, like a moon or something. Did you see that? Like, it was so broke. I'm like, dude, let your body heal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's taken on all types of different shapes, you know. He's had a lot of weird things. The ice lake, you know, a lot of things have happened to that face.
He's lucky he's alive after that one. Jesus.
Premier League's back tonight, lads. Arsenal kicking off things against Coventry City. Pretty exciting time. I will be interested in that for exactly 2 weeks before the NFL comes back, where I'll soak myself in previews.
You got to start getting in the NFL. It's time, brother. Broncos play tonight, preseason, second one. Bo Nix starting. Let's get our first look at Waddle.
Oh, shit. Should I watch it tonight? Like, is it actually the starters are playing? Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, they play for like, what has it been, like 10 plays or something. They always have like
get a series.
Yeah, a series or two.
Then. Well, then I can go to bed early, right? As soon as he goes off, I can just go, all right, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly.
The generational arm, Aaron Rodgers is back, I see. What's a great thing for the league. He's playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I saw him throw a dart to JD Metcalf when he was in Crow Park. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, what a guy. What's his name again? DK?
John Morgan, I think, is his name.
I've had a lot of name fuck-ups today, all right? I was talking shit about Shab calling Gillian Robertson Gillian, and then I hit the Dean Thomas. Now I've hit JD.
It's okay. Metcalf. We've had to like deal with some issues today, so it's like
Jordan. If anyone's messed up here, it's so it's been a nice stress free day.
To know. Yeah.
Can we even pull up super chats here, Jordan, or what's the brand?
Oh, look at this!
Oh, wow. Shit! Wow! Oh, suddenly it works.
Something that works.
How Blake X Gustino, thank you for the $2. He says, how will Illy Toppy do against Mickey Johnson? What?
Say what?
Is that happening on RAF? What's happening here? No, I'm just checking very quickly.
Illy Toppy.
I don't know what that means.
Your ice cream.
I'm sorry, dude. I really don't know what to do with that one. Is he asking about Ilya Topuria v. Michael Johnson? I think Ilya would win. That's my hot take on that one. No one else? Okay.
Yeah. I don't have any idea who we're even talking about.
I can't even
about.
Handle it oh, so hot.
Life Lessons Combat Sports. That's a well-thought-out name for $5. Would you interview anyone from MMAFA on the show? I feel they could provide some great insight on the industry, antitrust cases, and free agency. Is this like the fighter association that are taking the like as part of the class action lawsuit? Is that what this is? We have been covering this quite a bit. We had John Nash come in to cover it specifically. I think he's the best legal mind in MMA. That is what we're referring to here, right? Like, we've had John Nash on this show a couple of times.
He's been on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, I think specifically if we're talking about like Rob Macy or some of those guys that have been involved in that effort for a long time, like I think it's always interesting when you can talk to them. They just don't do a whole lot of interviews these days. They've changed up their media strategy a while back to where they don't think it's worth talking to us that much about it.
How dare they?
That would sober up the show pretty too much, wouldn't it, Pete? I mean, you don't want to be sober.
Never want to be sober. Anything else there, Jordan? Playing a stormer, mate. Jordan? Okay.
That's it.
Jordan relentlessly refreshing the video thing. I guess that's what you do. Have you tried turning it off and turn it on again?
I love that little three shot right there. That's nice. Triptych, you know? Look at that.
Ben knew it was coming. Ben, did you give Ben a heads up to say we're taking a screenshot here? Because he's got a pleasant little smile on his face there.
Yeah.
I'm biting my lip.
Yeah.
I was speaking as that happened. How the fuck did that happen? You know what I mean? And we're saying that. Like, we're dropping an F-bomb.
Yeah. Wait. You just look like you're uncomfortable. A little gas or something. That's all it is. You know what I mean?
Well, I did tell you about my situation before we started. But listen. That is all we've got for you today. I can only apologize for Jordan. You know what I mean? The video elements. My God. He's usually great at his job. From me, Ben, Chuck, the aforementioned Jordan, beautiful Oscar Lowe.
I'll remember this one man. Forever, boys. This is a good one.
I love you very much. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.